I think it's recording.
It is recording.
Oh, we're just sitting here in silence.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far into it just in case that warning pops up again. Did you do something different this time?
I closed a page. I closed one of my pages that maybe have been a tab that was open. Maybe it was one of my tabs.
Okay.
We're slowly building up our confidence with every passing second when we don't get the notice, but it is like a sword of Damocles that hangs over your head. Like, what if we're like an hour into it and it's like, sorry, none of this was recorded. We reject you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. I think we're good. Hey.
Hi, for the fifth time.
Fifth time.
It took us 5 tries to get here. We're still really not sure if we are here, but we'll run with it. It's nice to have you on my show, Amanda.
It's nice to have you on my show also for the third time.
Three-peats.
Maybe should we both introduce ourselves since this is going to be cross-posted, and maybe like not all your listeners will be familiar with who I am, and maybe not all my listeners will be familiar with who you are.
Sure. Sure.
You can go first.
Oh, should I go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
I'm Sina. Hi, I run The East as a podcast. It's a show about a lot of different things. You'll like it. You should subscribe if you don't already. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
It has 800 billion episodes. And I'm putting out a ton more.
What's your favorite episode?
Yours?
Oh, come
Whatever
on.
You were, yeah. I love all my children equally. That's the line my episode children. I don't know. I don't really like, they all blur together at a certain point. They don't. I used to like keep track of episodes in my head. I know it sounds like I'm dismissing the guests, but it's like, it's not like even the guests are like, yes, this is just like I don't know. This is pretentious to say, but like, it's one never ending conversation. That's what it feels like, my mm-hmm. show at this point. Mm-hmm. Of just like all these different people who like come into my imaginary salon that exists on the internet. Like it's very fun to do it like way. You just meet a ton of people. I've had all kinds of conversations. It's coming up to 4th year birthday. Coming up soon, actually, in a few months, but it's exciting. Amanda, you should introduce yourself now.
Okay. My name is Amanda. I am Cat Content Only on Twitter. I also have a podcast. It's called Radio Free Amanda. I've been on Sina's podcast 3 times. Well, this is my 3rd time. And I also make him put up previews of some of my episodes, so you might know me from that. But I also have a podcast. It's called Radio Free Amanda, which I hope you check out and subscribe.
Yay.
Yay.
For a change, we're actually doing like a fun episode where we're not yelling or screaming.
Yeah.
I have some yelling to do at the end, but we can save that.
No, I was just thinking
this is gonna be like a pleasant episode.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what a nice change of pace this episode is, because it's not about imperialism in any way. Yeah. It's not about the great Satan, the US. It's not about China. It's not about the Middle East. It's not about anything like really like overly intellectual. It's about what is it about? It's about like these like rural cooking videos that are really popular on social media now, which you've been into these for a really long time.
I've been to it for like several years, but really I'm very provincial in my taste, is that I only watch really only one, which is the biggest one. Albeit she's like very famous, Li Zhiqi. If I'm saying it right.
Mm-hmm.
She's this amazing woman. She's like, I can't even describe her, but there's a lot written about her, and we will talk about that a little bit. I've been watching her for a long time, but you are the one who kind of, we did this through obviously cell phone over the course of COVID too, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
You would send me a lot of the ones you would find.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you're obviously the expert here in this domain, because you don't even watch that much Li Zhiqi. I think you're more into these. You're more into the Douyin and the TikTok people. And I mean, I know a few of the people on the Chinese kind of rural YouTubers,
mm-hmm.
not YouTubers, sorry, the TikTokers. I think he's another famous one. He goes under High Trend. He's like a famous one.
I don't think I know that one.
He's got a bunch, like his account kind of changes every now and then, but that's the one I remember. I can include it here, but
Yeah. Well, we should put like a video of Li Zhiqi in the beginning, and then as sort of an introduction.
We could play it now. She's amazing. She's like this, you know, her story is amazing too.
Mm-hmm.
She has this kind of Cinderella story where she was kind of living. She was born in the countryside and then left to the city. She sort of followed a very kind of modern Chinese route mm-hmm. that a lot of Chinese people kind of walked, which was leave their, you know, somewhat dilapidated villages in the countryside to go and seek opportunities in cities. I mean, this is not just the Chinese story, too. This is like a global story.
Mm-hmm.
This is like one of the global stories of modernity, right? The sort of the trek from the country to the city. But she eventually moved back. I mean, one version of her story, which I've heard, is that she had kind of troubles with her step siblings. She kind of lived with a dad.
She had trouble with her stepmom, I think. Her stepmom abused her. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And she kind of fled back to her village
mm-hmm.
with her grandmother and grandfather and began living, you know, the sort of traditional rural life that her family presumably had lived for centuries before that, right? And so it's a pretty simple story. It's like something out of a novel that you would read, but it's also a very human. I mean, there's a reason why it's out of a novel, because it's like a realist story. Like it's a story that a ton of people have, which is kind of return to your roots. And she eventually started this YouTubing, this sort of vlogging, it was called back then. People don't talk about vlogging anymore.
Oh, do you pronounce it vlogging or vlogging? I always thought it's
vlogging, I guess.
Vlogging. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, maybe vlogging. The kind of word disappeared because they got subsumed into the, I feel like, I mean, this is a different story, different conversation, but a lot of these people who kind of did their lives in this way, however you want to call it, kind of videoed their lives, they got sort of framed or sort of sucked into like whatever social media app that they use. So they became TikTokers or they became YouTubers. So it's also a weird story of like the 2000s and the 2010s specifically is the rise. At least it's interesting to me as an outsider. Obviously, I don't speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So I have only partial. And actually, it's an interesting, I think that's part of what's interesting is that a lot of these people cater to a non-Chinese audience, which I actually think Li Zhiqi doesn't. Li Zhiqi doesn't cater. No, sorry. A lot of people don't cater to a non-Chinese audience, but their ability to become global stars and like global phenomenon, there is a kind of translatability of what these people are doing in these activities, that like food is a universal value, that, you know, like something that Li Zhiqi did is like she made like a silk like bedspread.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like something that people can recognize. And like even with like a little bit of translation in terms of like the steps involved of like what's happening in this scene, like that video is amazing. Like you can, I'll clip it in here as I talk about it.
Okay.
But stuff like that is interesting, is that the translation, the language barrier doesn't really mean very much, is that, you know, I think Chinese is a pretty severe language barrier insofar as
she doesn't ever really talk in any of her videos. Yeah. But I mean, you understand what's going on because it's, you see what she's doing. Yeah.
You do get, she does have dialogue with the people around her. So it's not like a silent thing. Like she does interact with the people, which they never subtitle, which is like, you know, so she just goes about her life. And, you know, so we can get into her story too, because there's an interesting bit of backlash against her too. In like the early 2020, people started hearing about her more outside of China, I feel. I think her global brand. And this, of course, brought on these like, the loser gusanos who are paid to like write stupid articles. And we can talk about those later. I'm going to clip those in. But that's basically the extent of my knowledge. I mean, I know a few other ones here and there. Mm-hmm. So that's been my general impression. It's been mostly through her.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent a lot of time watching her and recommending her to people. And like, I always put her on and stuff for my family and friends and stuff. But
yeah. So this is what I know about her. She like came from a village, right? And she moved to the city. So this is like a story that's really common among Li Zhiqi and also like these other Chinese TikTok and YouTube rural food content creators. So there's like Li Zhiqi, and I don't know if you've heard of her, but there's also, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Danshi Shogi? Shogi?
Yeah, I've seen... She's another, I've seen her videos, a few.
Yeah. So there's like one video I want to show of hers, like after we talk about Li Zhiqi. But Li Zhiqi, she moved to the, you know, they both moved to the city and then returned back to the countryside. But Li Zhiqi was a waitress in the city and she was a DJ.
Yeah.
And then she moved back to the countryside after her grandpa died to take care of her grandma. And she started to create this kind of rural food content to promote her specialty products that she would sell on this Chinese platform that's like kind of like a cross between Amazon and Etsy. And she'd sell these products. She created this content to promote these products to sell to support her sick grandmother. And now she's like basically like a huge brand name in China. And her videos are used to promote her brand and these kinds of specialty products. And like if you go to China to any store, you'll see like her stuff like everywhere. So her brand is used to sell like instant noodles, instant drinks, any kind of like, you know, shelf stable instant product. And in 2020 alone, she made over $300 million. Wow. In US dollars in sales.
Mashallah.
Yeah. But
it's great.
If you go to her YouTube, if you go to her TikTok, you'll notice that she hasn't put out content since like November or December. And it's because she's having a dispute right now with her, I guess it's like a management company.
Like her marketing. Yeah, marketing.
Her multi-channel network. Yeah. So like if you're an influencer, you're basically in charge of your content, right? But then you hire what's called a multi-channel network, which handles the commercial aspect. And they handle like the monetization strategy. They handle your brand. While the influencer, you're in charge of your creative content. And so the MCN agencies, they would provide services like assisting the content creators with refining content, editing videos, negotiating collaborations with brands. And so she had like some sort of dispute. She's having some sort of dispute with her MCN right now, which is why, you know, she hasn't put out content in like 6 or 7 months. But it's really interesting, like this whole phenomenon of this like interest in these Chinese rural cooking videos, because I feel like people in the States really started, they started becoming popular here in the States during the COVID pandemic, like in 2020, because people started like hanging out on TikTok a lot more. But also I feel like
Cottagecore
really popular. Because like I think they're really popular in among like Chinese urban dwellers in China, as well as like probably like urban dwellers here, because this kind of rural content presents like this really like idyllic country lifestyle, and it kind of presents like an escape from you know, this fast-paced lifestyle of, you know, like this, the monotony of like going to work and like coming back home and just like being stuck in a computer. Because I know you feel that too. Like we talk about it sometimes, like how you, you know, I like house plants, but you like gardening and you like doing stuff with your hands. And it feels like an escape from the city, right? So I feel like people, that's the reason why content like hers has become so popular.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, there is, you know, the kind of urbanization of humanity, which has taken place, like, pretty rapidly over the course of 2 centuries. You know, it's been really violent, and that it's mm-hmm. left, it's probably left deep psychological wounds on us that, you know, we have, like, for instance, like, 24/7 light, like, you know, artificial light. Like, there's that great book, 24/7, it's by Verso, I forget the author. But basically, like that story of like remapping like our sleep cycles mm-hmm. and just the most basic elements of our, and of course, obviously our food, the quality of our water, like this transformation of human beings from a largely rural, you know, group of, you know, largely rural civilization into these densely urban, hyper urbanized, you know, electrified, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like this is quite like a shocking thing to us, I think, historically. So I think it makes sense that we do have, there is a kind of culture that's developed, a kind of yearning for the, you know, for the olden days, right? And whatever you want to call it, nostalgia or whatever. There are quite a few articles that kind of accuse Li Jiqi very stupidly in the cheap kind of Gusano way of somehow being propaganda, because God forbid a Chinese person do anything at all that isn't obliquely political, that has to
be. So they do accuse her of being part of this like statewide propaganda campaign. And like a lot of these like sort of accusations that Westerners throw at, there's like a little bit of truth in that, in that these videos are promoted by the Chinese government as part of its what it calls its rural revitalization plan, right? So you know, like in the past few decades, there has been like this mass migration from the countryside to the cities, but now the Chinese government wants to modernize agriculture and diversify its economy by revitalizing the countryside, by encouraging tourism to rural areas. And it's part of this like poverty alleviation program that's targeted at the countryside. So they've been like promoting this sort of content like Li Jiqi's as a way of, you know, promoting the countryside. Like farming vacations have become really popular in recent years, with city dwellers like visiting the countryside to like kind of like learn crafts and like learn different folk customs. And the government wants to reverse this sort of brain drain by encouraging people who work in tech and other people who work in the city to move out to rural areas.
I mean, that's but the thing is that like the sinister aspect of like, I mean, I can put in a couple of one example. Like it's this one, I closed the article actually, life nostalgia of the life of nostalgic content on Li Jiqi. It's an article by a grad student, Stephanie Wong. She's a grad student at Brown, PhD writer and doctoral candidate in history at Brown University. And you know, it's low-key propaganda, but who cares when you just want to watch an immaculately dressed young woman pound the shit out of purple rice she harvested in front of her house. Particularly after 2 years of growing trouble, it's nice to escape into Lee's farm to table fantasy. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah. And it's just like this idea that there's this very like juvenile and very like, you know, very kind of liberal belief that everything that unfolds in China is somehow immense, immaculately staged, managed by this puppet called the CCP, that Chinese people just kind of live at the behest of this. I mean, their favorite word is authoritarian, whatever, that they have censors and they have this and that. And, you know, like the thought that the fact that the Chinese government would take this up to that would somehow connect themselves into like use people, or not use, I guess is the wrong verb, is that they would somehow promote this material or sometimes as be part of a larger sort of social agenda. It's just hard for people to believe that here because our governments don't talk like that. They don't like what it's usually private industry and the culture industry that kind of like moves in. Now, are there projects that kind of promote farming life? Yes, of course. Like that's not, you know, is there a culture of like returning to the countryside in everywhere part of the world? Yes. I watch Iranian, you know, I watch Iranian villagers. And so it's always in the Chinese case that this kind of worldview pops up where, oh no, this is propaganda. It's low key propaganda. As if like the simple act of existing and creating content in China is always already part of some meticulously planned sort of superhuman sort of intelligence op. Right. And like, this is such like this idiotic, like just moronic worldview that puts like 1.5 billion people, right? Like that's like a good fraction of humanity, right? Into this simplistic framework where everything is just a product of the government. That's it. That's all that government is. As if one government could actually do all that. And you just put it in there. And that's like, I mean, I'll put in a couple of examples as we're talking about this to sort of just how like, you know, and especially like Radio Free Asia has an episode, has a thing on her. Like there's the search results are like pure copium of Western people, like how dare this person become popular and how dare this person, like this Chinese person, attain a kind of global visibility, right? Without going through our system of representation, there must be something sinister. That's the thing that like gets me mad about all of this, the reaction.
Yeah, yeah. They always paint it as something sinister, as like Chinese propaganda. But I think the promotion, the statewide promotion of this is actually very smart. And, you know, like I'm a fan of the targeted poverty alleviation program that they've been doing in the countryside. So I think it's a very smart idea. But I'm going to read a quote. So this is, this will tell you just like how much money that they've been like injecting into this kind of content and stuff. This is from the article that you sent me. I forget who wrote it, but this is a quote. I'll link it in the show notes. As urban-centered e-entrepreneurship and e-consumerism gradually reach a plateau, rural digital entrepreneurship is increasingly regarded as a new propeller for sustaining China's e-commerce boom and becomes more foregrounded. For example, in July 2018, ByteDance, which is the company that owns TikTok and then Douyin in China, they announced that it would pour at least 500 million RMB into supporting creators, Sanong creators, sorry, like this like farm content stuff, and soon launched a government-endorsed program to encourage local internet celebrities to promote their hometowns. Similarly, Douyin's competitor, Kuishu, also launched a Happy Village campaign to support its more than 3.75 million users from the relatively poor areas. So yeah, this is like a lot of money is being injected into this stuff. And at some point, I do want to talk about the differences between all of these like different video apps between like TikTok, Douyin, and Kuishu. But yeah.
Douyin seems like a lot more fun than TikTok, especially now. TikTok stinks.
Well, Douyin's probably more fun than TikTok because Douyin exists in China. And then TikTok is just like a really popular app that's used by Gen Z, like American Gen Z. Yeah. But have you ever heard of Kuaishou? Okay, no. So it's really interesting. Kuaishou actually predates. Okay, so there's TikTok, which is, you know, the app we're all familiar with in the States. And then there's Douyin, which is the sister of TikTok in China. But they're both, it's pretty much the same, but they're both owned by this Chinese company called ByteDance. There's also another video app, a similar video app in China. It's called Kuaishou, and it actually predates TikTok and Douyin in China. And see, this is really interesting because you see like some of like the class differentiations among all of these apps. So Kuaishou, it started as an app that was really popular among people from rural areas. And they would, it started as like a GIF making app. And then several years later, they started allowing you to upload short videos. And now it's like kind of similar to TikTok and Douyin. But it started as an app where people from rural areas would upload videos of themselves doing like these like really crazy jackass style pranks and stunts. And it became really popular among people in rural areas and people of, it started to reflect the lower sex socioeconomic ranks of its users compared to Douyin, which is more targeted toward city dwellers. And Kuaishou actually has like those rural cooking videos like Li Shiji, but what it's not like as popular on that app as they are on Douyin, which is like targeted more toward like more like sophisticated cosmopolitan people in the cities. And so
is Douyin as dancey as TikTok is?
I feel like
Or TikTok
so
was.
I'm not,
TikTok isn't as dancey as it used
Douyin.
To be.
I'm not on Douyin. I'm only on Kuaishou. So I don't really, I'm not familiar with the content very much on Douyin. So, you know, like Li Shiqi and that kind of content is really popular on Douyin because it's marketed toward the city dwellers, which are actually like, you know, the taste makers. Like a lot... Like Kuaishou is more for like rural like pranks and stunts and like Jackass kind of stuff. And what's also really popular on Kuaishou, I've noticed, are like seaside cooking videos or like seaside eating videos, where you have like a person who like works on a ship or something, and they are cooking or eating like this huge dish of seafood. And sometimes they're with their wife and they're eating together and it's really wholesome. Sometimes they're with their kid and they're eating seafood together. I actually have like a couple that I wanna show you.